Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian, regardless of which language you're fluent or not fluent in. We are thrilled that you're joining us for the 44th episode of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we're recording right after the fourth set of matches in Serie A. Tomorrow there's more. There's the main week five games starting. Bologna and Inter are playing this evening. But before we do winners and losers from the weekend and preview what's to come tomorrow, Alex, I'm joined by our great producer, Alex Goldberg. I wanted to ask you about that great interview we did with Carlo Garganese last Thursday. A lot of interesting information. I wanted to see, Alex, what stood out to you in that one.
Frankly, David, a lot stood out to me from that interview you had with Carlo. He says so many cutting, bold, awesome things that are usually spot on. Something he said that was spot on was he was not impressed by Sarri's lineup last week against Shakhtar. Despite you and him loving Sarri and loving Napoli, thinking that Napoli can really win the Scudetto this season, he pointed out that Sarri easily could have rested a player like Mertens over the weekend against a much weaker side in Benevento instead of against Shakhtar in the Champions League. He mentioned that when Mertens was put on the pitch against Shakhtar, he immediately looked like the best player. Fast forward to now, Napoli won over the weekend against Benevento 6-0. Mertens had a hat trick. They easily could have won that game with Milik in there and then played Mertens last week against Shakhtar. So that was very spot on by Carlo. So that's just one of the things that stood out to me from that interview. David, what stood out to you from that interview with Carlo?
Well, similar to what you said, because that was, I mean, there was a lot of interesting parts, even on Milan's transfers. You know, it was pretty bold saying, look, they spent a ton, but the only sure thing champion they acquired was Bonucci, which is an interesting way of looking at it. But I like the part like you on Napoli, but also I'm going to take it a step further. Carlo said that in his opinion, Napoli is almost punting the Champions League and just focusing on the Scudetto. And granted, it's a tiny sample size. You know, they got through the preliminary round in the Champions League. I can see why they would go all out for that, for the revenues. But in the group stage against Shakhtar, they rested Mertens, who came in the second half when it was almost too late, and he's their best player. So I think Carlo's really on to something. It seems to me Napoli is going all in to win a Serie A title. And look, you know, people in Naples still talk about the Maradona, the two Scudetti, 20, 30 years later in glowing terms. So this makes a lot of sense. I thought that was a very, very interesting take. Enjoyed the whole interview. A lot of interesting takes on VAR and all the top teams in Serie A. So if you haven't checked that out, I recommend it. I don't feel like any of that stuff is any less relevant today than it was when we recorded it. So, Alex, let's get into talking a little bit about what we saw over the weekend. I wanted to see what games you were able to watch and anything that stood out to you from the weekend.
Well, I've already talked about them a little bit. I watched Napoli, 6-0 win, tremendous stuff. Lorenzo Insigne with a goal and an assist. That always makes me happy. But what did not make me happy, and I rarely ever say this, was Antonio Conte. Chelsea had a very disappointing draw to Arsenal Sunday morning, 0-0 at Stamford Bridge. Chelsea was fully healthy. Eden Hazard, you could argue, is not 100%, but he's back. Bakayoko's been playing well. Gary Cahill was back from suspension, and that was part of the problem for me. I felt like Antonio Conte started Gary Cahill solely for the fact that A, he was back from suspension, and B, he didn't screw up midweek against a way lesser side, Carabag, in the Champions League. I was very confused by Conte's lineup. I do think it's dangerous to judge a lineup before the game starts, but all of my worries and doubts about the lineup that I had before the game started were confirmed to me already by halftime. Chelsea was lackluster. They were playing safe, it felt, which you should never do against, in my opinion, a weakened Arsenal side, a side in Arsenal that had no momentum, who played very poorly in the Europa League. There was no reason for Chelsea not to really go all out in this game. I know Conte prefers to be sturdy rather than weak and vulnerable, but there was no reason not to start Rudiger over Cahill. Honestly, there was no reason to not start Bakayoko over Cesc Fabregas, despite the pedigree Cesc Fabregas has. I think Fabregas just doesn't fit as well in the starting lineup. But nonetheless, I felt like it was a safe lineup from Antonio Conte. Yes, I love Antonio Conte, but I can still critique his lineup. I thought Zappa Costa should have been in for Moses. I thought Rudiger should have been in for Cahill. I thought Bakayoko should have been in for Fabregas. And I thought Hazard should have been in for Willian or Pedro. And if Conte wants to say, well, he's not 100% yet, that's fine. Then just play him 65, 70 minutes, but start him. It was very important, in my opinion, that Chelsea got an early goal. And they were stagnant. They were dry. Very rarely, as I said, will I critique Conte. But I need to when I really feel like it needs to be done. So he was my loser for Chelsea this weekend. But all right, David, enough for me about Conte and my own Chelsea frustrations. What did you watch this weekend?
You know, what I find interesting of what you're saying is that it seems, you know, I saw quite a few Chelsea fans on Twitter say the same thing, that they would hope Rudiger would start. You know, I'm happy to see he's fit in pretty well in the Champions League. Look, you know, I've been wrong, we've been wrong on a lot of players and whatnot, but, you know, it seems we're on a pretty good roll now. I'm probably going to jinx it, but, you know, so far so good with a lot of the predictions that we had going into this season. You know, I did my usual Serie A roundup. There was that early Inter game against Crotone. For Crotone, was pretty impressive. Inter, you know, has struggled in those sorts of matches in the past, and they won. Similar with Milan and Udinese. I think they lost all 6 points to Udinese last season. I know they had lost at San Siro against them. So it might not have been the most aesthetically pleasing win for Milan, but they really needed to win that match. Then, of course, I watched Lazio in the afternoon match against Genoa. I'm going to get into that with some winners and losers with that. And then I saw the Dybala show against Sassuolo. I got to be honest, this weekend I got into the movie Gomorrah, the series Gomorrah. We'll get into that at the end of the show. And NBA 2K came out, so I watched a little bit of Roma just because I haven't watched as much of them as I should. So that was my roundup for the weekend.
Yeah, I got to get my hands on NBA 2K18. I was just going to wait and get it at the same time as FIFA 18, but after your glowing remarks, I don't think I can wait any longer, especially since the NBA season starts a lot earlier this year than in previous ones, so I'm getting that basketball fever. All right, David, you alluded to it, so let's get to it. Who are our winners and losers of episode 44 of the Calcioland podcast?
I can't believe it, man. 44 already. So we got quite a few winners. The first one was 16-year-old Genoa striker Pellegri, 16 years old, youngest player to score a brace in Serie A history. Really impressive player. Then, of course, I mentioned Dybala. What I am going to say about him is that I find that all the comparisons to Messi and everyone that points out every time he has a great match and said, oh, he needs to do this in the Champions League, I just think, you know, we should just enjoy Dybala, period. The comparisons to Messi and always pointing to the Champions League in different ways to me take away from that enjoyment. Sure, he needs to be more consistent in the Champions League. It doesn't take away from the breathtaking performances we've seen from him in Serie A. Kalinic, another player like Rudiger, we pumped up quite a bit in the summer, got his chance to start for Milan, was really excellent player. I think, you know, that signing makes so much sense to me too, because he can groom Andre Silva, who they invested a lot in. Kalinic is a very solid starter, but not such a huge name that if Andre Silva establishes himself, that he can be moved aside. Another big winner was Florenzi on Roma, starting the first match after over a calendar year. Had actually a good performance against Verona, so welcome back to him. Ciro Immobile simply cannot stop scoring. Did it in the Europa League off the bench. Did it again against Genoa. I regret at the beginning of the season not making a bold prediction that he'd score more goals than Belotti. It's a little bit easier to say now, seeing how he started and Belotti, little bit of a slower start, although he's been good as well. I'm going to say it now. I think Immobile ends up with more goals. And then a surprise one, I'm going to list Nagatomo on Inter. They invested a lot on fullbacks, wingbacks this summer. So far, Nagatomo has actually played pretty well. I know I'm going to get a lot of Twitter hate for that, but I'm not the only one that's recognized him for really more than holding his own. Now it seems Spalletti's believing in him. As far as losers, I have three of them. I have two teams that are off to very poor starts of the season, and that's Genoa. Only 1 point. The club is up for sale. Really kind of a mess of a situation. There are two big additions in the summer. Bertolacci got a red card, been suspended. La Padula's hurt. Thank God they have this young kid, Pellegri, who's going to need to really step up for them. Udinese, I thought they played pretty well against Milan at San Siro, but they only find themselves with 3 points. It's going to be a rough season for them. They have three intriguing prospects, Janko, Fofana, DePaul, but beyond that, it's pretty bare. They have some non-exciting veterans. And the last one's Higuain. You know, a lot of Juve fans very upset with him. I just put him here because a lot of people are trashing him. I think he's going to be just fine. He had a stretch last season where he struggled as well, and then he went on a roll where he couldn't stop scoring. I also think there's a little bit to be said that Higuain might be helping Dybala just by taking attention from the defense and letting him shine. So those are winners and losers for the week. And now somebody who has been a big winner on our show is my friend Thousand Names in Italy. I knew the segment with his predictions was going to be a big hit. I love seeing the tweets. People, non-Italian speakers, quoting him, translating his tweets that he makes on other stuff. So shout out to Thousand. We love his prediction. So let's get into what he sent us for this week, and I'll add some color to these to preview the matches, which are all these matches that we go over now are going to be on the schedule tomorrow. So first one for Thousand, Juventus-Fiorentina 3-0. He has Higuain, Mandzukic, and Matuidi scoring. His comment is Bernardeschi and Douglas Costa are like ghosts, 90 million thrown down the drain. Now, both Bernardeschi and Douglas Costa have barely started, so he's a little bit down on this. Now, I have seen some reports that Douglas Costa might start tomorrow, but we'll see how that goes. I'm going to read it in Italian for all the people tuning in Italy to get, because we have the exclusive on his Serie A predictions in Italian, pronostico Juve-Fiorentina 3-0. Higuain, Mandzukic, Matuidi, Bernardeschi e Douglas Costa, Fantasmi, 90 milioni buttati. Another quick note on the game, it looks like Szczęsny is going to start for Juve and goal tomorrow. It seems when there's back-to-back games close, you're going to see a lot of Szczęsny. They're grooming him to eventually replace Buffon, so he'll get first crack there. Next game from 1,000, definitely the most exciting match. Tomorrow on the schedule is Lazio-Napoli. Two teams are off to a great start. So Thousand's prediction is Napoli is going to win 3-1 at the Olimpico. He has Mertens, Insigne, Mobile, and Callejon scoring. He's saying the Lazio cycle is coming to an end and that Sarri is going to make up for his humiliation in Europe. In Italian, pronostico Lazio-Napoli 1-3, Mertens, Insigne, Mobile, Callejon, finito il ciclo della Lazio. Sarri riscatta l'umiliazione europea. Another note on this, there were some reports that De Vrij may not play. It looks like he's set to start. Lazio really needs him against Napoli's amazing attack. This should really be an exciting match. Immobile is from Napoli. I know deep down he probably would like to play for that club, so let's see how that match goes. Thousand's last prediction, he picked interesting, you know, it was kind of interesting why he picked it. He took Udinese Torino. He has it as 1-1. Goals by Maxi Lopez and Belotti. Thousand's prediction is that Mihailovic is already focused on the derby against Juve, and the fix is in for a draw. So Thousand is a pretty skeptical. He always thinks there might be some conspiracy theories here. In Italian, pronostico Udinese Torino, 1-1 Lopez Bellotti, Sinisa già la testa al derby, pareggio concordato. So Thousand did well last week. I know he had Juve winning. He was wrong on Genoa Lazio. He had that as a draw, but that was pretty close. And what else did he have? He had Chievo-Atalanta, which ended up as a draw. So I always thought, you know, maybe not bet on these predictions, but I'm going to change my tune there. Thousand is really on to something. Last game I wanted to talk about, not one of his predictions, Milan's facing Spal. Milan's going to start having a much harder schedule in the next few weeks, but, you know, it's good if they keep beating up on these easy teams. Spal, newly promoted team. Of the newly promoted team, they've done the best. But Milan's really on a roll, going to be an intriguing match. They're going with a formation pretty similar to what Conte is running at Chelsea. Andre Silva with Suso and Hakan Kolanoglu behind him. So I think that's a great formation for Milan. So curious to see how that goes. So that's our preview for Wednesday's game. On Thursday's show, we're going to preview what's coming up over the weekend. So now let's get to your great Twitter questions. Really some great ones, you know, with no transfer window stuff. I'm very intrigued to see what you guys are sending us over Seti S. So, Alex, which ones are we going over today?
All right, let's start with a keeper that drives me crazy when I face him in FIFA. David, why is Samir Handanovic so underrated by fans outside of Serie A?
So it's a great question, and I've been singing Handanovic's praises for quite some time. I'm going to say a bold prediction that if Handanovic was on Napoli, I would make him prohibitive favorites to win the Scudetto. That's how highly I think of him. But I think the reason why fans outside of Serie A don't know him that well is that he never played in the Champions League. A little bit hard to believe. He came at Inter after Julio Cesar, after they had done really well. I think he gets overshadowed, A, from Buffon, you know, the veteran, the legend, and then Donnarumma in recent years has kind of taken the mantle as the heir apparent to Buffon as the best keeper in Serie A. So I think he gets lost in the shuffle because of those two things. He was sensational against Crotone. You know, granted, Inter maybe struggled a little bit more than they should have, but he's really a difference maker. Like I said earlier, I would love to see what Napoli would look like with a keeper of his caliber, but he really can be a difference maker for the Nerazzurri.
Yeah, any keeper whose last name starts with hand, they have to be good. All right, moving on. What or who do you think can resolve Juventus's defensive problems?
So, interestingly, today, I always read my colleague Fabrizio Romano's columns on Calcio Mercato. I write on the English part of the site, but my colleague Fab has a great column. I think it's almost daily on the Italian part of the site. And he had today that Juve's cooling off their interest in Jimenez, the center back on Atletico Madrid, for a combination of things. For one, Jimenez set to extend with Atletico Madrid would cost a lot to get him. And they seem really, although the results have been hit or miss, they seem really focused on Rugani, Benatia, Chiellini, and Barzagli. The other thing that I think Juve could help Juve's defense is this profile. Let me know if this sounds familiar. A former world champion who played in Germany, who can play both as a right back and a center back. That was basically Barzagli when he arrived at Juve. I think it was Del Piero's recommendation. This is when Juve was terrible. And now they did it again in the summer with Hoedes from Schalke. Now, I haven't watched that much of him. I've heard some good things on him. Maybe he can help Juve. The good thing is De Sciglio is going to be out for a while, so I think we might see him at right back. I think he can be an extra player in the mix at center back. I think, too, one of the reasons why Juve's cooled off on Jimenez is they really believe in Caldara, who is at Atalanta. I doubt they'll be able to bring him back in January, but next season. So I think Juve really needs Rugani to step up. They need to, you know, he seems to play a lot in Serie A, but not in the Champions League. They need Benatia to play better. He, quite frankly, has been quite disappointing, and Chiellini to stay healthy. This has been Juve's worst defense since the days of Maifredi. And, you know, people that are old like me remember when Juve hired him. He was supposed to be their Arrigo Sacchi. This was the year that Baggio arrived, and it turned out to be an unmitigated disaster. This is the worst defense, at least statistic-wise, since then. So Juve needs to get their act together there.
All right, staying on the old lady, who would be an ideal replacement for Max Allegri at Juve?
So this is, to me, this is a hypothetical, though I know there's a lot of Juve fans that would love for Allegri to leave now. So I have some intriguing names. You know, I'd love to see Sarri at Juve. I'd love to see him at a club that can really dominate. I think all the jokes on Sarri's style, oh, it looks great, but can you really win with that? Guess what? Sacchi won a ton with that exact style when he had the team to do it at Milan. So I wouldn't mind seeing that at Juve. It's a little bit rough around the edges. I'm not sure how that would work. The other name, it's just probably one that's been suggested by a lot recently, and this is Simone Inzaghi. At Lazio, really up-and-coming manager, has the pedigree from being a former player. His brother Pippo, of course, very famous. So I think he'd have the polish for a big club. And I always think, and Alex, sorry, I don't have a heart attack, I always think there's a chance that Conte is going to come back to Juve someday. We've seen Trapattoni and Lippi do it in years past. So I think Allegri is going to stay at Juve at least through next season, barring something really, really terrible. After that, wouldn't shock me. More Simone Inzaghi or Conte. I think Sarri just wouldn't be a fit at Juve, although in a lot of ways I'd like to see it.
Okay, well, I should say, Antonio Conte, in case you're hearing this episode and you heard me speak about you earlier, I didn't mean it. Please stay at Chelsea. All right, moving on. David, you already talked about him earlier. Is Wonder Kid Pellegri a done deal to Milan?
So, no. I mean, look, and this is a lot of people asking me transfer questions recently, and God bless them. I get it. A lot of you follow me for that. But I think right now it's just way too premature to talk about any transfers. Like, January window, we usually don't see huge moves. Summer window is so far away. Like, so much can change, at least for the next 6 weeks. I really wouldn't even worry about transfers at all. I would just focus on the games. That being said, Milan on the last day of the transfer window, Mirabelli, the director, met with Pellegrini's agent. They kind of have, I wouldn't even call it a right of first refusal, but, you know, they seem to have kind of a reserved, like, potential negotiation. So they seem to have a leg up with that. But again, so much can change. Now there's foreign clubs linked to him. The other thing is, I go to the interview that Milan director Fassone gave to The Guardian, and she said, look, you know, we need to make the Champions League. If not, we might have to sell a big-name player. So if Milan doesn't make the Champions League, I wouldn't even worry so much about who they can buy, but can they keep what they have? So I don't want to be too pessimistic. I think Milan definitely has a very good chance to finish in the top four, but this goes back to so much can change early in the season. Like, think of how many years we thought it was just a matter of time till Berardi went to Juve, never materialized. Just last January, February, we thought that Manolas and Ricardo Rodriguez would definitely be on Inter, and none of those things happened. So again, I would be cautious and just enjoying the games right now and not worrying so much about transfers.
All right, David, should Roma bench Kevin Strootman in favor of Lorenzo Pellegrini, who played pretty well on Saturday?
So I think Lorenzo Pellegrini needs to start more regularly for Roma. Very impressed with him. He was with Di Francesco Sassuolo. I wouldn't bench Strootman. What I would do is, and Nainggolan's hurt right now, so they can both play. But once Nainggolan's healthy, I might even consider the idea of playing him more up front. You know, Dzeko's been complaining he feels a little bit isolated. If he had Raja up there helping him, would be good. The other thing we've talked a lot on the podcast is I think De Rossi needs to move back to center back, preferably in a three-man back line. Roma's very deep in the midfield. Gonalons is finally going to start, but they're not very good at center back. So I'm going to say Pellegrini needs to start, but it wouldn't be in favor of Strootman.
Yeah, Spalletti had the ninja up front last year, and he was tremendous, so that could be a good move. All right, do you think a big-money move like Gareth Bale to Juve or to Inter is possible? And why is it so hard for Italian clubs to sign players like that?
Well, look, you know, there are encouraging signs, and we've said it a few times. The fact that Bonucci left Juve and stayed in Serie A is very positive. Same with Bernardeschi leaving Fiorentina and going to their big rivals, Juve. So there are some encouraging signs on Serie A. Maybe more being able to retain talent. I just don't know how easy it is to get a big name from abroad to want to come. And this is also one of the reasons why Juve invested so heavily in Higuain, is they're like, look, you know, we're realistically not going to get a Lewandowski to come play for us. So I think there's something to be said to that. I think there's a lot of momentum for Serie A going back to once they once were. But it's going to take a little bit more time. I think even just right now, there's a lot of talk on Milinkovic-Savic, him being the next big name next summer. Like, I'd love for him to stay in Serie A, but at this time, it doesn't seem that likely. So I think we're at least a couple of years away from Serie A being able to attract that level of talent. But I think there are some pretty encouraging signs. We just need to keep the momentum going.
All right, which team seems the weakest to you after four games, and do you envision a Crotone-like miracle from one of the outsiders? And also, should Serie A move to 18 teams?
Yeah, so I answer that part first. Yeah, I think the quality of the league would be better. 18 teams seems to be more reasonable. We've seen a lot of the newly promoted teams go back down. Last season, it could have been all three if it wasn't for Crotone's amazing run. This season, you know, Crotone really played well against Inter. It'll be tough for them, though, to stay up. The newly promoted team, Spal, has been somewhat impressive. I think having Borriello is a great signing for them, especially because they weakened Cagliari, another contender in the race to avoid relegation. Verona has been very disappointing. They signed quite a few veterans. You know, they had Cercio, I think, has barely played. Caceres has been pretty good for them, but they're struggling. They have a veteran team. Their manager might be sacked very soon. They're struggling. Benevento, as you mentioned, got destroyed by Napoli. I found it pretty funny that Benevento, slogan going into the match against Napoli is the patron saint of Napoli is San Gennaro, and he was born in Benevento, and Benevento was like, hey, San Gennaro, remember you from our towns. I think that goes to show how desperate they were. So it's going to be rough. I definitely think it could be possible that all three of these newly promoted teams go down, but Genoa and Udinese might be in the mix with Crotone, but I think it would be better if we went to 18 team.
All right. Next Twitter question. Why has Sassuolo struggled so much to start the season? Is it all because of DeFrancesco's departure?
I think DeFrancesco's departure is part of it, but I think, you know, Pellegrini leaving was a big factor. De Frel as well. Look, De Frel struggled a little bit at Roma so far, but he was a really good player for Sassuolo, and they really need to get Berardi going. I know he was injured, missed the match against Juve, which is an annual event. But they really need for Berardi to be Berardi again. They kind of gambled with the manager. They brought one from Serie B, Bucci. They almost would have probably been better off going with a veteran manager, Serie A, just to kind of go through a transition year. So they're a little bit in trouble. I would be concerned if I'm them.
Okay, and the last Twitter question. David, how much rotation should each team do in a game?
This was a good question, and we talked about it with Napoli. And look, you know, I think there's no hard rule with this. I think there's a lot of factors that come into play. Like some players, by their style of play, are going to use more energy in matches. Some players are more injury-prone. So I don't think there's a rule that applies to every team or every player. I think there are some managers that are better at managing turnover than others. I think, you know, it's experience of being in multiple competitions. And the other thing, too, is as fans from the outside, it's a little bit hard to judge. We're not at the practices seeing, you know, the form of players. Then, of course, there's other factors with players traveling for international breaks, long flights and whatnot. So there's a lot of factors that go into that. So I want to thank all you guys for sending in questions. Always terrific stuff. Send them in using the CalcioLand hashtag. And thank you to everyone who's leaving reviews, retweeting our show. We count on you to promote what we do. So what I wanted to close the show was on a little bit of a pop culture angle. We haven't done it in a little while. So I mentioned when we were talking about the weekend, I've been watching the show Gomorrah on Netflix. People have been telling me to watch it for years. I love the movie and the book that it's based on, and it's finally available in the U.S., so I've been binge-watching that. And, you know, it really made me think of, like, the influence of Sopranos on TV in general. Now, I think there's been better shows since Sopranos. I think The Wire surpassed it in a lot of ways. I love Gomorrah so far. I'm seeing a lot of people tweet me, hey, you know, this is better than Sopranos. It wouldn't shock me. It maybe becomes that, but we forget how groundbreaking Sopranos was, and it really changed out everything. It elevated the TV series as an art form, and I think one of the biggest reasons for that is the performance of James Gandolfini as Tony Soprano. Yesterday was would have been his 56th birthday, and I was thinking a lot about him when I saw that. Such a great range as an actor. I think he really was the first guy on TV who made, like, what a terrible guy, mobster who killed people, look really sympathetic because of his charisma. Like, some of the interactions with his family and his son were just so moving. What an incredible actor Tony Soprano, James Gandolfini was. I think, you know, definitely David Chase and Sopranos elevated TV, but without that great casting of Gandolfini in that role, I'm not sure we'd have all these other amazing TV shows. So thinking about you, Gandolfini, age of 56, the silver lining that I can say for him going out the way he did is, for one, it's so hard for actors who play such an iconic role to kind of move past it. I look at like John Hamm, who was Don Draper on Mad Men. I think tremendous actor, just can't get out of that shadow. Gandolfini didn't have to worry about that in a sense. And I have to say, if you have to go, I can't think of a better way of doing that while eating great food in Rome, in Italy. So when my day comes, I hope it's that way. And thinking of you, Gandolfini, and all the influence you had on great TV. So thank you all for listening, and talk to you on Thursday.